This is the Fabulous Heel Nerds Wrestling Podcast.
Yes, y'all. How's it going? We are back, we are here, and we are doing another one. And we are at the very end of this short little Hindsight 2020 bookended series of One Night Stand. We're at the very last one to be named One Night Stand, One Night Stand 08. Obviously, ECW, a long, long distant memory now here, really. And we may as well just get straight into it. Scott, One Night Stand 2008. Start off with a little overall. Give me an overall feeling or opinion on the show as a whole. What do you reckon? How bad, how good? Was it shit? Like, I'd never seen this before, and I'd heard a lot of bad things. I don't think it was quite as bad as I was expecting.
It was nowhere near as bad as I was expecting. I went into this, obviously, after watching the previous one, 2007, which I thought was really poor. Mm-hmm. And I went into this with really, really low expectations. This is the first one where it's ECW is almost completely gone, apart from it's called WWE ECW One Night Stand 2008 Extreme Rules. Long title
Long
for a show.
Long-ass title.
Yeah. But it wasn't nowhere near as bad as I was expecting. There's actually some decent matches. Mm-hmm. It feels a bit weird putting this in the series now after watching that, because the remnants of ECW is completely gone.
In spirit, I mean, in name, it is still there. There are ECW brand matches on it. Like, the ECW title is not defended, but there are still ECW branded matches where they're wearing the black refs gear and like a couple of the ECW wrestlers. I think one actually ECW original, isn't it?
One ECW original is in the entire show. One ECW original.
Yeah.
Discounting Mick Foley and Taz on commentary.
Yeah, true, yeah.
Who were on two separate commentary teams.
Yeah.
ECW, for what we knew ECW was, is completely gone. The first two felt way more like homages to what ECW was, mm-hmm. paying tribute to a brand that existed for one night, and then this is WWE's, you know, incarnation of ECW, the branded matches that are ECW branded matches, quotation marks in the air, are all WWE wrestlers, essentially.
Tommy Dreamer, isn't it?
Well, apart from Tommy Dreamer,
yeah.
At the very beginning of the show, I noticed that straight away, because they had a package for the pay-per-view, and in the package at the beginning of the pay-per-view, they're all just big WWE stars. You got Edge, Undertaker, John Cena, Batista.
Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels and Randy Orton are all in this package at the beginning. Not one of them is known for being an ECW wrestler.
Yeah, not even an ECW style of wrestler.
No, not at all.
First thing that caught me about this before we go actually into the pay-per-view, did you see the poster for this?
Yeah, it was weird. The poster is basically Kane as a blacksmith.
Yeah.
And what makes it even more bizarre is the set when you got out there. It's a WWE set again. They've not even bothered with like a little, even slightly reminiscent of the old ECW entrance. Mm. It's like a construction site.
I didn't get that. Like they had like a flash, like there was like dump trucks up there and like traffic cones.
Yeah, cherry picker.
Yeah, cherry picker. And even, you know, like when you're going on the motorway and there's motorway maintenance, so they have those like big neon signs that will say like lane closure.
Yeah, road.
It had, road closed, please use other lane or
road
whatever.
Road work signs, basically.
Yeah. It had Extreme Rules coming up on that. One Night Stand, Extreme Rules. It flashed from One Night Stand to Extreme Rules.
Interesting aesthetic.
What the hell has Roadworks got to do with being extreme?
I don't know. What does a blacksmith have to do with being extreme?
Kane wasn't even on the show.
Yeah, Kane not even on the show, not even in a dark match.
No,
I mean, there wasn't a pre-show for this one. Not in anywhere near the show, but Kane's on the poster.
He was in it for like 4 seconds in a backstage.
Yeah.
Watching telly.
Yeah, that was basically it.
But,
so
like, he wasn't on it. Like, so the didn't know what was going on there. Why was Kane being a blacksmith? He wasn't on the show. And for some reason, road works are extreme, apparently. So, confused the hell out of me.
Yeah, very bizarre. Very bizarre. Anyways, we'll get right into the show. There's apparently a dark match beforehand, which was Matt Hardy against Shelton Benjamin, which sounds like it would be a pretty good match, but alas, it was not filmed.
Yeah.
So the first match on the card is Jeff Hardy and Umaga in a Falls Count Anywhere match. Now, this match is actually quite... Clips from it are used quite a lot in sort of WWE highlight reels or highlight reels of extreme moments and things like that, because there's two spots in the match that are both, in my opinion, quite goofy, but could be construed as being, you know, quite, you know, infamous. The first one being, so they fight in the ring for a bit, and then they very quickly make their way through the crowd to a backstage area. Mm-hmm. Jeff Hardy slides down the banister of the stairs and does a clothesline.
That was kind of fun, but yeah, kind of goofy, but like kind of a bit silly and fun.
Yeah, a bit silly and fun, and that's used everywhere. And then the second one was the finish of the match, which is a huge swanton off the top of the...
it's like a lightning truck, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, a lightning truck outside to supposedly the concrete floor. Which is shot very, very...
suspect.
Yeah, suspect. And
you don't see the landing whatsoever. It doesn't make any noise whatsoever. Yeah. And you barely even see him make the pin, because they have to... So, like, obviously, he landed on, like, a big foam rubber pad.
Yeah, he's landed on a crash mat.
A crash mat. But, like, that was, like, behind a load of bins. But because of the way it was shot, you didn't, like I said, you didn't see the landing at all, and it didn't make any noise. So yeah. it was like, ooh, they're climbing to the top of this thing, and then a proper, proper anti-climax.
I thought so. I thought the match overall was okay there. It was just kind of goofy, actual Falls Count Anywhere style that they used to do as well. Now Falls Count Anywhere matches, they very rarely go through the backstage area a lot.
Yeah, they usually just go around the like around the arena.
Yeah, around the arena, whereas this is like, you know, they're up out by the
Probably because it's
stalls.
Difficult to shoot.
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, it kind of takes away from the fact that slightly... that this is a sort of impromptu thing that they do. When they do go to the proper, like, where the stalls are and where the merchandise stands are and where the ATMs are and things like that, and they've already got security there, like, keeping crowds back to give them space, that kind of takes away the magic a little bit. But maybe that's why they don't do it. But it was kind of fun still. I thought it was fun seeing them roaming...
I wasn't entirely sure. Could you see a crash mat in the background, like another one?
At the very end, what you could see was, and this is what I suspect happened, because when they eventually do shoot the pin, which is after a good few seconds, there's no crash mat there. They are just lying on the concrete. But in the distance, you can see a crash mat on the floor. So I'm suspecting what happened was, is that camera keeps a very low angle where it's behind these sort of flight cases. So you don't see the landing, and then for a few seconds you've got someone's obviously run in, pulled out the mat and just thrown it to one side. And
but it's not out of shot.
Yeah, but it's unfortunately not out of shot. Funnily enough, whilst they're doing the pin, it's not out of shot. Then they do another replay of the pin and it's not out of shot. And then when they cut back to it and they're showing Jeff and Umaga on the floor, the camera guy's changed his angle around so the mat would be behind him. So obviously someone's been, you know, shouting in his ear, get a different angle.
Yeah.
You can
see
the fucking crash mat that we've just pulled out of the way.
But yeah, don't know if that bloke still works there.
maybe not. You never know.
But yeah, 9 minutes, 16 seconds. We get the win with obviously the swanton onto Umaga. And overall, like I say, a bit of fun, bit of lighthearted silliness. Like, it's not extreme though, is it?
No, we'll get on to the extreme stuff, I'm sure, in this next match. I'm talking about the extreme things that happened, because this next match is ECW Heavyweight Title Number One Contendership 5-Way Singapore Kane Match.
Say that again?
ECW Heavyweight Title Number One Contendership 5-Way Singapore Kane Match.
There you go.
Anyone know what that was? Basically, they've got in the four corners of the ring, they've got Singapore canes on poles, but there's five people in the match. Yeah. So only four people, in theory, can grab canes. Mm-hmm. But then as the match goes on, you see that Big Show has a giant bucket of Singapore canes.
A bin for a garbage can full of them.
Just at the side of the side of the
room. Yeah, with about a dozen Singapore canes
in. So you kind of wonder, like, well, why the hell were they all on the poles?
Yeah, seeing as there's just a big bin full of them. Yeah. Like two foot away.
Spend all this time trying to climb up a pole to get one, and you could have just jumped to the outside and grabbed.
Yeah, it didn't really make a great deal of sense that. But anyway, in the match we have CM Punk, who is Money in the Bank holder, Chavo Guerrero, John Morrison, Tommy Dreamer, and The Big Show. The actual match itself, bit of a. Would you say a bit of a clusterfuck? It was kind of entertaining. It was okay.
It was okay in spots, but it was very...
rushed. It seemed a bit, maybe a tad rushed to me.
Yeah, I mean, they only went for 8 minutes and, what, 8.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like they were trying to get in probably 20 minutes worth of stuff. And with five guys in there, that is pretty hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is the only appearance from an ECW original. Tommy Dreamer is in here.
It was kind of overshadowed by some NFL dude in the crowd.
Yeah, there was some, like, NFL
Josh
player.
Josh Merriman or something like that.
Yeah, an NFL player was in the crowd and they kept shooting him a lot. I think he got...
And he got cracked with a cane, didn't he? And then took Punk's cane.
He got about 4 minutes out of the 8 minutes airtime for that. but then they're probably one of the most extreme incidents to happen on this show, happens in this match, mm-hmm. where Big Show gets legitimately bust open by accidentally... Basically, he takes a cane to the back of the leg while carrying the steel steps. Falls to his knees, falls on his face, and cracks his face on the inside of the steel steps.
Yeah.
And takes a big old gouge out of his forehead, didn't he?
Yeah, it's a proper slice, like, proper hard way. It looks cool.
It looked cool, and it gave when...
it hurt.
I think it gave when he got up and then started doing his whole menacing, I'm the Big Show, storming about.
It gave it a bit more, like, drama and menace.
Yeah, it did make it feel a little bit more legitimate then.
Yeah.
But I find it interesting that... We'll get to the other one in a little bit, but the two probably most extreme or most hardcore moments, if you like, in this pay-per-view were both accidents.
True.
Yeah,
very, very true.
So this one's the first one, and we'll get to the other one later on. But there were both accidents where people got legitimately hurt. This first one here is Big Show gets himself busted open.
Main story of the match here is everybody battered a Big Show.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I did. Yeah, it is. And the Big Show ends up winning, which obviously makes him look really big. But I did find
sensible booking for a giant.
Yeah, it's pretty common and very sensible. But what I did find was almost symbolic in the way that the Big Show won, because the Big Show beat Tommy Dreamer. It's who he gets the pin on, and not only does he beat him, he stands on him for the pin. He pins him with a foot, and. Raises his hand in the air, and it was almost like a conquering of the old ECW.
I mean, I didn't actually think of that when I watched it, but yeah, I mean, maybe even unintentionally, that is, it's symbolic, isn't it? Like you say, like even if it was intentional or it wasn't intentional, it's very much, the death knell.
Yeah.
For
indeed, I did enjoy this match, though. I did find this match. Quite enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
There's matches on the card that I didn't enjoy, mm-hmm. but this one I did find quite fun. As messy as it was in parts, I did think it was, worthwhile a watch, I think.
Yeah. Big Show basically gets the win, comes back at the end after getting battered down for most of it, and batters everybody with canes and gets a direct shot to the cranium. On Tommy Dreamer for the pin. 8 minutes, 35 seconds.
And lords over him because he's a big WWE guy.
Yep.
Bastard. Next, we have a First Blood match. John Cena against JBL. This match was strange because all I had in my head at this entire match meant that, and I'm sure a lot of people did, even though it was 3 years prior to this, is this is not going to live up to... the match they had in 2005. So in 2005, John Cena and JBL had a last man standing match at Armageddon, I believe.
Mm.
It was either Armageddon or Judgment Day, I can't remember. And that match was brutal and way more extreme than this match. Way, way, way more extreme than this
match.
Don't
recall the match.
John Cena ends up with a complete crimson mask covered in blood, standing on top of JBL's limo. So that's 3 years prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, that's just, you know, a match that I know of that those two guys had. So maybe I'm a bit, you know, I'm just on my own here, and that's, it's just me that's sitting thinking that the entire time. But when you say First Blood, John Cena, JBL, I think of that match.
Yeah.
Whereas this, even for an Extreme Rules pay-per-view, was a lot more light tame. And soft and tame. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it went for 40 minutes and 20 seconds.
That seemed long.
Felt a bit long.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, the JBL's always stiff and always laying his shit in. That's just his style. So, like, you know, if you like that kind of style, you like this match. But it was, I felt it was fairly slow.
Yeah.
And something in particular, nothing to do with the match as such, that I noticed straight away is JBL came out wearing like a ring jacket, like he does. And he was promoting his own product. His own energy and vitality drink was promoted on his jacket. And they actually come back to that later in the show. I just think it was really weird that they allowed their wrestlers or talent or whatever you want to call it to promote their own businesses on WWE television.
I'm sure they don't do that for everyone. I'm sure he's one of a few exceptions that was probably allowed.
Vince likes millionaires and billionaires.
Yeah, and he probably liked the fact that he's just like, oh, it's vitality.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd get you dick hard. That sort of stuff, yeah. So, I don't know. It was what it was. The ending was lame.
It was.
In my opinion, the ending of this match was the turning point for the pay-per-view becoming a bit bad for quite a while.
Yeah.
Basically, so the ref keeps checking for blood on each of them, and they're covering their heads. And then JBL goes to the outside to get a chain
that he had wrapped in his towel.
He comes back in the match. Cena takes it off him, strangles him with it, which that supposedly makes Cena... Yeah,
hits him in the stomach. Yeah. Not the head or the face. Hits him in the stomach and then does like an STF with his chain, isn't it?
Yeah.
But and then somehow, I mean, it's not like he had it over his mouth, but he was strangling him with said chain, and all of a sudden, blood, in air quotes, starts pissing from his mouth. And it's clearly a capsule.
Yeah, very clearly.
Yeah.
Bizarre. And I think this is when, you don't first notice it, but this is when it's really apparent that the crowd is quite flat for...
Yeah, and he's trying to celebrate a bit, and he's not really getting much in reciprocation.
No, nothing coming from the crowd at all. The crowd was a kind of a more family-based WWE crowd. There was one guy wearing a CCW shirt in the front row.
And I bet he was disappointed.
I know. I'm like, mate, you have come to the wrong show. So, yeah, the crowd is dead flat. The whole atmosphere of the building... You know, even though it's not a bad pay-per-view as such, there is good matches on it. The crowd just didn't seem to enjoy the majority of it.
Just shy of 10,000, 9,600 attendance apparently at the San Diego Sports Arena. Like,
yeah.
Make of that what you will. Can't say I've ever been, but they were a bit flat.
Yeah.
But you know, moving on, swiftly on, to the next match. We had a women's or divas match, obviously, as it was back then. Beth Phoenix versus Melina in an I Quit match. Now, something that didn't occur to me until the end of the match for this. Most I Quit matches that you've seen, which ones spring to mind? Like
The Rock Mankind.
Rock Mankind at the Rumble, yeah. Obviously. Yeah. That heavily involved microphone.
Yeah.
So what you do generally in an I Quit match is beat the shit out of your opponent, grab the microphone, stick it in the face,
yeah,
and ask them if they quit.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't mimic that with your microphone.
Yeah, they heard me, I think.
What you do is you grab their microphone and you say,
all right. All right, Nobby. I talk with my hands.
So, no, and there was no mics in this, so it was just sort of the ref asking. So it was more like a submissions match, really.
Yeah.
And they did. What I will say this, what is nice about this is it is a proper women's match. It's not like the... pudding wrestling that they had on the last one.
No, it's a proper wrestling match, and there are some quite nice like submission type maneuvers.
But there's only submission type maneuvers in the entire thing.
But that's not what from an I Quit match. They're usually bloody and brutal.
Yeah, you batter someone until they can't go on.
Until they can't go on. It's not like a technical... I mean, which it's fine. I like a good submission match. Don't get me wrong. I like the technical wrestling, but was not really what it says on the tin for what the WWE have led you to believe I Quit matches are.
No, it wasn't. But it was nice seeing sort of a different change of pace with the women's wrestling. It was good. And there was some really good submissions in there. Some really fucking wild holds. Like inverted STF at one point, that looked absolutely ruthless.
And like an inverted like surfboard type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Generally, Beth chewing up Melina, being the bigger and stronger of the two.
Yeah, generally.
And she gets the win at 9 minutes, 6 seconds with, that was with said inverted surfboard, wasn't it, I think? I think it was like an inverted surfboard, wasn't it? She was cranking on her back and her neck and her chin anyway.
Yeah.
But Beth, you know, twists are good. The crowd don't really seem into it, though, do they?
I wasn't too into it. I thought it was okay. I just think it was a very slow, even though it's a submissions match, and I know I should take that into it.
Well, it wasn't a submissions match. It was supposed to be an I Quit match.
Yeah, but it was, you know, for all intents and purposes, it turned into a submissions match.
Yeah.
And I should take that for what it was. I did get a bit bored and, you know, lost my interest, shall I say, quite...
Fair enough. No.
Quite a little bit.
Be honest.
Yeah, so Beth Phoenix gets the win there, and then... Moving right along.
Well, not actually. If you're going to go on to the next match, I wanted to talk again about this little backstage segment with Mickey James and John Cena here.
Oh, yeah.
That was really weird, and I think this was promoting JBL's energy drink.
Because it's
supposed to give you, like, vitality. And, like, there got Mickey James comes in and starts congratulating him, saying, oh, I want to spend the evening with you kind of thing. And then Mike Adamley, who is the... commentator for ECW, the one who famously accidentally called Jeff Hardy Jeff Harvey, is what I mainly know him for, because I didn't really watch ECW.
Yeah, he also, going back to the second match, the ECW heavyweight title number one contendership five-way Singapore K match, that one, he keeps referring to CM Punk as CM.
Yeah, not as Punk.
Yeah, not as Punk or CM Punk, just as CM.
Just as CM, yeah.
Weird
guy.
Yeah.
Weird guy. Apparently, he's a former NFL player who has been found to suffer from CTA.
Oh, really?
No. Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, so there's a segment with John Cena and Mickey James. A bit weird.
It was, and then, like, this Mike Adamley guy comes out of nowhere and starts saying that I'm going out and celebrating in Tijuana. Will you come with me? Okay, you won't come with me, but here, have this Mama Juana energy drink because it puts lead in your pencil or some shit. Basically, it was an advert for JBL's energy drink.
Yeah,
which can't say I ever tried, but it is weird that they like. They, I mean, they do that now, but like it's clearly an advert straight away. This actually looked like a segment, didn't it?
It was set up like a segment, but it turned into a kind of an advert.
Yeah.
Very bizarre. Sort of, yeah, a little bit. What's the word? Convoluted advertisement.
Yeah,
a secret ad.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's a WWE employee, yeah. So it's okay, apparently.
Next up, we had my least favourite stipulation match.
Stretcher match, yeah. Your least favourite stipulation in general of stipulation matches?
Definitely.
Or just because we've seen two in as many pay-per-views
on these,
now.
On these shows, my least favourite, I would say. I can't think of... I mean, the honour poll matches, I think, are pretty dumb. But the stretcher matches, Batista against Shawn Michaels. And this is a... a slow one.
I quite liked it.
I thought it was okay.
I liked it. Lovely.
It dragged on a little bit, I think.
I liked it. Lovely bit of back and forth. HBK always takes a good beating, and he did in this pretty much throughout the entire match, and he takes a beating very well. You weren't feeling it.
I thought it was okay. I just thought it was a bit too long. I mean, it went 16 minutes, 55 seconds. And
for a, marquee match, that's a good amount of time.
It is a good amount of time, but I just think it was slow in parts. They teased the ending probably two or three times. Chris Jericho comes out, and weirdly, Batista doesn't do anything about that, which I thought was strange.
Yeah, he just kind of comes with, like, sort of...
tries to egg on Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, like taunts, yeah.
Yeah. He's trying to egg him on, saying, I believe in you and all this sort of stuff. And Batista just sort of lets him get away with it, which I found very
odd. Didn't he batter him?
Yeah, why don't you take his head off, Batista? That's what you're supposed to do. You're an animal.
He does, though. He very much does. There's several Batista bombs, and it ends with a spine buster on the stairs, and Batista gets the win at 16:55. Batista comes out looking strong, as he often does, being the animal that he is.
Yeah, being the machine, the animal that he is, Batista.
The animal machine.
Yeah. He did. I had a little bit more of a think about the entrance as well that you mentioned last time, where you said, is Batista's entrance where he does the guns to the pyro a homage to Scott Hall doing his guns, which you thought was a homage to Scarface? And my conclusion is, I don't think it is.
Why not?
It's completely different. It's just guns, and that's basically about the same. That's about where all the similarities.
You reckon I'm just being a nerd and overthinking stuff.
Definitely. If you watch them both side by side, Scott Hall's entrance and then Batista's entrance, no, they're completely different.
He doesn't even do his on his entrance, does he? When he was Razor Ramon, he didn't even do that on his entrance. He just did it like generally at the end of matches.
Yeah.
Or when grandstanding in the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's probably nothing to do with it, but I would like to think that it's...
I mean, is Mick Foley homaging is Batista homaging Mick Foley, who was homaging Scott Hall?
Why?
Mick Foley does his bang bang.
No, because Razor did it first.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So is...
Oh, right, I see what you mean.
Yeah. Is Mick Foley in this mix of homages to guns?
No.
Or is it just a coincidence?
That's probably a coincidence, mate.
Yeah. Anyway, so that match finishes with Batista getting the win, pushes him over the finish line on the stretcher. Lame. And then next up we have a last man standing match.
Yeah.
WWE heavyweight title Triple H against Randy Orton. Now this match is also quite infamous for one spot that happened, which is also the other most extreme thing that happened on the show, which turned out to be an accident.
Yeah.
Randy Orton goes and breaks his collarbone.
Yeah, he does. Or you could say Triple H broke his collarbone.
Yes. I mean, it was an amazing spot. It did. Phenomenal.
I mean, even before I knew he had a broken collarbone, I popped for that.
Yeah.
I did pop for it. It was cool. It was cool, but so basically the spot, what happens is he goes up obviously for an RKO near to the ropes, and Triple H basically just pushes him over the top rope to the outside.
Yeah, throws him essentially.
Yeah, like pushes him, throws him in mid-flight basically, and mid-jump.
Yeah, so it's impressive, but he lands clean on his shoulder and busts his collarbone. And I immediately picked up on that. He said to the referee, "I've broken my collarbone." And then I was just like, oh shit, he did to break his collarbone. That's legitimate. Like, I remember this because he was out for some time. And then I was doing a bit of reading about it. And apparently that completely changed the outcome of the match, because he was supposed to go on to win that match and then go into Night of Champions as champion. But he broke his collarbone and they had to decide on the fly.
Called an audible, as they say.
They had to give the win to Triple H.
Yeah.
But apparently, you know, another little tidbit that I read is that it also, what that led to was sort of a bit of a blessing for Randy Orton, because he was expecting his first or second child with his wife, with Mrs. Orton, and had requested time off from live shows to be there at the birth, and was denied this until he broke his collarbone.
Maybe it's just a little something that Triple H and Randy Orton decided to do between themselves.
I doubt that. You can't, unless you go and, you know, start kicking someone in the collarbone, you can't deliberately break a collarbone.
You can do if you fall on it accidentally on purpose.
I doubt that's true.
Randy Orton allowed Brock Lesnar to elbow him full in the face.
Yeah.
But that's... The man's insane.
Yeah, but that's more guaranteed. Brock Lesnar saying, "I'm going to bust you up with my elbow." Triple H saying, "Do you want to get injured?"
That's probably, wrestlers, it's silly though.
I doubt he did on purpose.
Yeah, I doubt it too, but
just
playing the old devil's advocate game, it's fun. It's possible.
Yeah.
It's not impossible.
It's not impossible. It's not likely, though. Nothing's impossible, but I doubt that happened. Now, this match I actually found really entertaining. I thought it was pretty good. It goes for 30 minutes and 16 seconds.
Well, that was cut short. Like, it probably would have gone for at least another 5 minutes.
Yeah, it probably would have gone longer. It's interesting to see how they would have changed things around, because when Triple H won, he was very much on the offensive. Mm-hmm. And if you think that it's apparently, you know, Randy Orton was supposed to win, you know, how would he have got the win? What would they have done? Where would
Where would they have been going with it? Because obviously he was getting the beat down, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He pretty much was getting the beat down.
But alas, we'll never know. Triple H wins with like a sledgehammer to the head.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, breaks his collarbone. They don't waive the match. The match continues, but basically he pulls out his sledgehammer, does a sledgehammer shot to the head. You know, not obviously properly. If anyone's never seen, obviously you've all seen a Triple H sledgehammer shot to the head before.
Yeah, Triple H, who's apparently never used a sledgehammer before.
Yeah, yeah, he likes to put his hand over the hammer.
I just imagine him doing DIY at home, thinking, "Fuck, this really hurts."
Trying to hammer in a fence post with his fist.
Yeah.
But he looks. I mean, he looks genuinely pissed off, doesn't he, Randy Orton?
Yeah, well, I think like he sort of he loses him. I think it's commendable that he somewhat finished the match and that he didn't just wave it off.
Yeah,
but he does kind of lose himself a little bit to his pain and his frustrations, because even after he takes the sledgehammer to the head, mm-hmm. he doesn't act knocked out. He's lying on the floor, not even selling, screaming about his fucking shoulder still.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's not lying there. Saying,
whereas if he's in character, he's been knocked out by a sledgehammer.
Knocked out.
To
whereas he just lay on the floor screaming for the 10 count, fucking holding his broken collarbone.
Which, yeah, and then as a pop it like some kid.
Yeah, loses his temper with some kid in the crowd, which, you know, you got fucking 10,000 people booing you. Next to the kid is even a big bloke booing you, but no, you go straight for the kid. Which, you know.
Well, he's known to have a temper, isn't he?
Yeah. Heelish behaviour, but
yeah, I think he was just losing his rag.
Yeah, it seemed like me like he was just losing his temper a bit.
Yeah.
Maybe that kid was shouting the loudest. I did notice security afterwards.
Went straight to the kid.
Went straight to the kid and basically told him to stand
back
down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For your own good, this grown man and professional athlete probably will hit you if you carry on.
Yeah, which I think if it was just general healing, they don't tend to do. They just let them stand there and shout, whereas...
For your own safety, take a step back.
Yeah. This man will hit a child.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought it was a pretty good match.
I liked it. I mean, like, It's Triple H looking. They're both looking really strong. And I mean, Triple H is just amazing, isn't he? Really?
Yeah.
I think I don't know why, but I always like his punches. His punches always look really good.
Yeah, they do look pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Triple H. Well, Triple H and Randy Orton both absolute, legends now. Really. In the...
Could even say they're better at wrestling than me and you, Scott.
Yeah, I could even say that. You know, just about.
Just about.
Just about. Yeah, they're very, very good and legends in their own right. So seeing one of these old school matches between them is quite. I think it's quite weird to say old school about something that happened in 2007, but 2008, should I say? Yeah,
yeah.
But it was good seeing like one of their, you know, marquee matches that they had, like, you know, together, just a match that those two had, and they've got a long storied history now between them.
Mm-hmm.
With Batista in there as well, who's in the match before. Batista's obviously in that mix as well, recently retired. And just thinking it was fun to see more than anything else.
Yeah.
Speaking of legends, though,
mm-hmm.
do you often struggle to keep up with your wrestling news?
I do, mate, happens.
Yes, so do I. But a brilliant place that you can keep up with your wrestling news is 24wrestling.com. That also happens to be a brilliant place that you can listen to our podcast.
Ooh.
Okay, 24wrestling.com. They do daily news articles on all the haps that are happening in wrestling around the time. They've also got a lot of other great podcasts on there, all wrestling-based. That's 24wrestling.com. And as I said, you can also catch our shows on there. They've got our back catalogue up until this point as the Fabulous Heel Nerds. If you'd like to hear anything older than that, you can also catch us on the Arometa Network. Arometa has his own radio network with the Arometa Show, Pix Mix, Old School Lane. Loads of great shows on there hosted by him. A little bit of a different pace to wrestling. They tend to be more current affairs or pop culture based shows, but they're great. And you can find all of our old episodes from back in the day on there if you so wish. You can also find us on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, and pretty much anywhere where you've listened to podcasts, you can find us on there, and our back catalogue's on there. Anchor as well is also a brilliant place to find new podcasts. It's where we do most of our hosting from. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, with that out of the way, speaking of some other legends.
Oh, yeah.
This next match, Edge against The Undertaker.
Main event.
In a tables, ladders, and chairs match.
Title versus career. Undertaker had been made to say that if he loses this match, he'll retire.
That's not like him.
Yeah, yeah. He's not like... he likes to pretend to retire. Does our taker.
He does. That. Oh, he likes to actually retire and then get forced back into wrestling by Vince McMahon.
Do you reckon that's what happens?
I think it's got to be partly some of that. You know, I think it's partly... Maybe he does have some of that Ric Flair in him where he just can't retire.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he does... Maybe he is pushed sometimes as well.
Actually, so how old was Taker? How old was Ric Flair when he retired? Let's see.
Which time?
When he retired at Mania, when he was retired by Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, this was this year. Shawn Michaels and Batista actually did a little spot referencing that in their match.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, Batista
grabbed Shawn Michaels at one point before giving him another Batista bomb and says,
"I'm not sorry.
I don't love you, and I'm not sorry."
Yeah, I like that. I actually quite like that.
Little throwback to...
But like, Taker's 54 now.
Yeah.
How much longer is he going to keep going?
I mean, he could do a Terry Funk.
Still wrestles occasionally now.
Yeah.
75, I think he is. Yeah, crazy bastard. I was just wondering if he's the same age.
Is Flair?
No, I think Flair's
not the same age as...
No, I mean when he retired...
Oh, he'd be around about then. I think Flair was in maybe like 53.
Yeah, Taker's 54 now.
Yeah, I think...
He's 70 now, Rick is.
Yeah. So let's find this out. Was Ric Flair the same age as The Undertaker is now when he retired? Sometime today, research before.
Yeah, I should have done that. Fuck it, mate. Yeah, yeah. But they've got to be around the same age though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, I have a feeling I reckon Undertaker's going to retire next year. That would make him 30 years in the WWE.
Yeah. I mean, there's all these milestones he could have retired at.
Yeah, and did, yeah. Seemingly.
But this one seems like a pretty random one. It's not a real big milestone. It's fucking WWE's ECW One Night Stand Extreme Rules 2008.
Yeah. You know, it's hardly WrestleMania 20 or 30, is it?
When did you retire? Oh, I've retired at WWE's ECW One Night Stand Extreme Rules 2008. That epic pay-per-view. So it's not really landmark.
No, but nobody believed it was going to be.
No, I don't think anyone believed, because the whole storyline before is that his hand was forced into the position he was in by Vicky Guerrero.
Yeah.
Who I, at the time, didn't really get the fact that I hated her and she annoyed the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't, for some reason, even though in 2008 I was like 22, didn't really get the fact that I was supposed to. I was supposed to despise her.
Yeah, of course you were, yeah.
But she still grinded my gears, which means she's obviously very good at her job.
But obviously, you didn't view wrestling in the same way then, I don't think, did you?
No, not as much. Even at 22, I sort of... At 22, I was a lot
more... You're still watching a lot of it and enjoying it, but you didn't... Obviously, we didn't have the behind-the-scenes access that we kind of get now with the 24-hour news sites.
Yeah, no, I was still privy to everything that was going on, though, but it's still kind of... I still let myself get lulled into that. Yeah, worked into hating her.
Yeah.
And anyway, so his hand's sort of been forced into this position where if he doesn't win, he's got to retire. So no one really believes... That it is going to be his final retirement.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's weird stipulation, obviously, in much, you know, storyline wise, much in Edge's favour, being a tables, ladders, and chairs match.
Mm-hmm. Title actually vacant here, so, yeah. But the main stakes are obviously the career. And you would argue, even though Taker is a legend and a beast and bigger and stronger than Edge, that obviously TLC is his wheelhouse, is his match.
Yeah. Undertaker's doesn't really do these kinds of matches either.
He's done a couple of ladder matches and stuff like that.
He's done a brilliant ladder match, just to, you know, sidetrack a little bit here. He was in a brilliant ladder match in 2000 and, I want to say, 2003 against Jeff Hardy on Raw. And that is a sick match. Well, check that one out if you can. It's really good. But yeah, so this match was, I thought it was pretty decent. A lot of shenanigans going on towards the end with people running in and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But it was okay. Just basically a spot fest more than anything else. A lot of people going through tables and a lot of edge going through ladders, yeah, and stuff like that.
A lot of, arranging of furniture, as you often get in these.
Yeah.
But they were fairly intense as well. Like, they looked fairly intense, and, you know, they're hitting each other hard. There's some nice reversals, like Taker, which he quite often did his, leg drop on the apron, which was blocked by a chair, which I quite liked. And, you know, there's a lot of splashing through tables. And then, obviously, early in the match, you get them four tables set up, don't you?
Whatever for.
Whatever could that possibly be? That couldn't possibly be for the spot to end the match, could it?
I must say, I did think that Edge was going to take the bump through those.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting Taker to do it. You kind of, when he does go through them, though, you can kind of see it coming, because as he's climbing the ladder, he keeps looking at the tables. Am I going to hit these?
please let me hit these.
But it was okay. So Edge gets the win, by the way, and because it's Taker who goes to climb the ladder at the end, and Edge tips the ladder over and he goes through the four tables on the outside. Huge bump.
Mm-hmm. For a man that size as well.
Yeah, definitely. And we saw earlier in the show how, you know, a man who is big taking a big bump can be very dangerous.
Do you mean the Big Show?
No, Randy Orton breaking his arm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Randy.
Is he big? He's big.
Is Randy Orton big?
Not compared to The Undertaker.
Height-wise, no, but he's probably, you know, he's probably near the same weight as him.
Got 50 pounds. But still, yeah, he's a big lad.
Yeah, he's a good, yeah, he's a massive guy.
Mm.
Is Randy Orton big? Jesus Christ. Anyway, so overall, I think this experience has been marred just by those three letters being stuck on the front of them. ECW.
Mm.
And I don't think we'd be revisiting this at all if it was just WWE Extreme Rules.
No, you're probably right. I mean, it's just a
bit that of would a make it a complete throwaway pay-per-view, which I suppose in a way it still is.
But the fact that it's got One Night Stand attached to it ultimately makes you think of the first two, done it, which,
yeah,
are very good.
Yeah, the first two are phenomenal. The first two are still some of my favourite pay-per-views that the WWE's ever produced. The first two are absolutely incredible. But the second two, 2007 and now 2008 that we're on, are just like, okay, it's official, ECW's dead.
Hmm.
Like, those three letters might still exist. We might stick the referees in black, mm-hmm, and we might have the odd, you know, original pop-up here or there. But
one in this whole pay-per-view.
One in this whole pay-per-view, yeah. But as a brand, for what it once was, ECW is now dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, what are your takeaways from it? That's my takeaways. Basically, a couple of good matches. My favourite match was probably the Last Man Standing match. I thought that was pretty fun.
I'd say that was my favorite match on there. I think Taker versus Edge in the TLC. Like, he's old school Taker. He was taking unprotected chair shots to the head,
which is interesting because this is post Benoit incident, yeah, now.
Yeah, but he's old school, obviously.
So yeah, so the lawsuit clearly hasn't come through yet.
No,
where they'd banned all chair shots to the head.
But like you said, ECW in essence dead as the dodo. Pay-per-view wasn't completely jack shit, but it wasn't
quite a sad way to end the series of hindsight 2020, really. But I suppose he couldn't have expected anything different, knowing, you know,
yeah,
that this did happen. And to be, you know, completely upfront and honest, until we started doing them, I didn't realize that there was one in 2008. I thought they just did 2005, 2006, 2007.
So did I, as it happened. Yeah. But it kind of emphatically does end, at least in WWE's eyes, the end of a type of product, doesn't it? The product changed not long after this, really.
Yeah, very true. Not long after this, for creative and legal reasons. I mean, you can sort of argue with Vincent Mann over which,
slowly. I mean, it happened slowly.
Yeah,
but
after it was a slow decline into the PG era, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
After this,
mm-hmm.
So interesting.
Which could be coming back, though. You know, the saying. You know, with the new people at the helm.
Yeah, they've only just recently changed back to TV-14.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, maybe WWE is going to go down a more hardcore route than it has done before. I can't see it going anywhere near as, you know, hard or as fast as AEW is,
mm-hmm.
or as hard or as fast as it even used to go. But it may be, you know, maybe be putting a little bit of salt into the mix.
A little slightly sprinkle, a little bit of seasoning.
Things up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that probably wraps it up.
That does wrap it up. Yeah, we'll be moving on to our new series.
Yeah, we're going to go on to the new series. So we'll probably revisit Hindsight 2020 at some point, I'm sure. But our new series is going to be called Horrible History. We're going to be doing things like the history of hardcore wrestling, history of Japanese wrestling, history of American wrestling, history of, you know, wrestling histories. These series are probably going to be...
Abridged histories.
Yeah. These series are probably going to be a lot more long form. Mm-hmm. I can't see us getting through all the history of, you know, Japanese wrestling in an hour. and, you know, we're going to maybe have a little change of pace to the format of the show a little bit as well, see how things mm-hmm. work out. And just, you know, just we're just trying things, keeping things new, trying to anyway.
Yes.
And, yeah, so that's it for today.
That's us.
Yeah, it was good reviewing WWE's ECW One Night Stand Extreme Rules 2007.
Was it?
And 2008. No, it was a slog, in all honesty. But hey-ho.
Hey-ho.
Wrestling is wrestling.
Yeah, man.
Okay, see you next time. Goodbye.
Ta-ra.